All right, thank you. Welcome to the September 11th meeting of the Pacifica Strategic Planning Committee. My name is Jim Dingman.
Recording in progress.
And I welcome all our audience and everybody else to the meeting. I'm going to call the meeting to order, and I'm going to take the roll. So please enter your name, you know, say you're here, et cetera, as I hit you with the nom de plume, the nom de guerre, the name. Julie Hewitt.
Here.
Heather Gray.
Here.
James Sagerton. James? All right, I'll sort of, I think
I'm
he's
here.
Thank
I'm
you.
Here.
Thank you, Jim. Beth Van Gutten.
Here.
And Donna Grimes.
Here.
Egberto Willis. I see Egberto is not here. Fred Dodsworth. Fred is not here either. Nancy Sorden. I see Nancy isn't here. And Bill Foster. Bill is not here. And Jim Dingman, I am here. Okay, so we have 6 out of 10 people. And our advisors, Lyndon Foley, Chris Corey, Alex Steinberg, Jim McFadden, and Susan Young are not here. They are ex officio members. All right, thank you. I sent out a agenda, and I'll read it out so everybody can get an idea of what it's about. The first issue to be raised is a director's inspection on the NFT issue, fiscal and audience data. I allocate 10 minutes to that. The CAB issue in motion, which has been debated now several weeks, 10 minutes to that. There was a advisory council motion passed several years ago, and I put 10 minutes to populate that. Another issue and agenda discuss is to make permanent the underwriting motion. That's 10 minutes. And then the State of Pacifica and the strategic plan to let the public know. We have an excellent first draft. It was done by the executive director. We're attempting to synthesize it. I would regard what we have achieved so far as a very, very, very rough draft. But obviously, there are a lot of very important issues to discuss that pertain to the existential existence of the foundation. Now, I move to approve the agenda. Does anybody have any objections? All right, hearing none, the agenda is accepted. I just need a timekeeper just to keep us in track for the amount of allocated time on each 10 minutes. Can somebody just volunteer to do that? I'm overwhelmed by the resounding thing. Okay, I will try to do that.
No, I can do it. Jim, I can do it for you. I speak from experience. It sucks to try to do is when you're chairing a meeting, so I'll do.
Thank you. Thank you, Julie. All right. Well, the first
question. Question.
Yeah.
Thank you. Were we going to do minutes? I forgot to.
There's no minutes right now. I don't have any right now because we don't have a secretary. I'll have to write up the minutes for this meeting, the next meeting, and I will get them done in the next week.
Okay.
There's nothing to approve right now. All right. Anyway.
Okay.
All right, so I want to discuss the first issue, the director's inspection on the NFT issue and fiscal and audience data. The reason I put that there is that I noticed we just had a PNB meeting and we had a pretty prompt response from when a director inspection was made. And so the reason I put the NFT issue is that there has been there's a whole debate and controversy over the NFTs. A non-fungible, thingamajiggies. And this has been going on for several years and we've not really gotten any significant, response to it. And I know it's quite controversial. I know that people have different opinions about it. I was reviewing the business data today. The straight business journalism about the issue for the past 6 months. And it's accurate to say that it's completely gotten mired down in litigation. In fact, the whole market for NFTs rebounded, but we're trying to get this set up as an additional revenue stream for the foundation and nothing to happen about this. And so, I'm proposing, and I will carry it out, and I want to get the other people to sign up for it. I want to get a director's inspection done on the actual communications that have been brought forth within the foundation. And this, of course, would be handled privately since it deals with staff, to get to the bottom of why, after several years, nothing was done on the NFT issue. Now, the second director's inspection I'm going to make, and I'd see if other people are willing to sign on, is that we've had two motions passed, fiscal and audience data. One that was brought forth last year in March. We just had another one passed by Fred Dosworth. He initiated it, and everybody passed it. More or less, they're the same issue. They have to do with us receiving timely data on the actual innards of how the foundation's fundraising drives are going on at each station. And I'm going to, draft a director inspection on that, because we've just simply not gotten the data. So, and the reason to do this is that, one, we know we need revenue. So even if people have controversies about the NFT issue, it's worthwhile. There are people who are with the foundation who are willing to work on this. Let them work on it, because it can at least bring in some money, if not, significant, with some money, better than no money at all. And then the fiscal and audience data, this is at this point beyond absurdity, because we have to function knowing the actual performance of how the stations are doing in terms of what's working and what's not working at the granular level in terms of raising money, since most of our money comes from listener members. 86% of it at this point, statistically, is from the source. So those are the issues. I just want to see what people have as a sense of their opinions about this. And the floor is open. Any comments on this issue? Who wants to talk first?
My hand is up.
Go on, Beth.
Yeah, it's no mystery why we don't have NFTs. It was put to a vote in this committee at least once, if not. I mean, it was an ongoing discussion for most of the last year or so, and it never got the votes. It didn't pass. There we asked a number of questions for which there were never answers forthcoming about the business end of these things, the legal end. And so in, from my perspective, the case was never effectively made. So that questions were never answered. And the proposal was for two people with zero previous experience with NFTs, never having created one or bought or sold one or managed one, were requesting that Pacifica put in their hands the audio of some of our most valuable archives to experiment with and see what could be, what they could, that just seemed like I think if we wanted to do that, we would start with someone who had experience, who had proven track record with it, who knew what they were doing, who knew what they were talking about, and we would start with some asset that was more expendable than our most valuable asset. So that was the proposal put forward, and it never got enough votes to get beyond this committee. So it's no great mystery. I'm not sure what I can't think of anything a director's inspection would turn up. It's not like there's anybody on the staff side of this that's obstructing it if it has not gotten a mandate.
All right. My understanding was that requests were made to actually get content. Lyndon made several series of requests, and nothing ever was responded to. But that's my understanding of it in terms of this. So I want to know what the communications were on this issue, at the very least, because we were not able to get anything to even start the process, and people making judgments about. Yes, go on, Beth.
Have you asked Stephanie? Because I watched that. I was on this committee at the time. I was in the management meetings at the time. I had a number of different conversations about this and other contacts. And my understanding was that it's clear that Lyndon and Alex wanted those audios, but they never had the mandate. They never had, there was never a vote in favor of that. So there was no mandate there. I don't think that he had the, I think you should put the question to Stephanie. I think she'll give you a very direct answer. That I don't think she authorized that. I don't think that the archive authorized that because this committee, the PNB, hadn't authorized it because the case had not yet been made. There were too many unanswered questions and too little experience behind it to just blindly entrust those resources to inexperienced people to experiment with. So you can tell her I sent you. I don't think she'll have a hard time having that conversation, but no great mystery.
All right. I've heard other comments, and Susan Young has joined us. Go on, Susan.
Yeah, thank you very much. And Beth and I are on the same side of this issue. As now, a reminder, I am a carryover board member, as are Alex and Linda. There, for one thing, the bottom has dropped out of the Bitcoin market. Another is we do not know what the legal framework of this would be. There is very little expectation that it could generate real money in the short term. And we do not have an understanding of what the infringement of intellectual property would be, the loss of it. And there are all kinds of issues about who has rights to the things that we might want to use. It requires a lot of very careful legal investigation. So I'm with Beth that I do not think that this is a strategy for which there has been a real endorsement or a real understanding, but I don't have a vote.
All right. Thank you, Susan. Does anybody else have a comment about this? Nobody? All right.
James, I'll say something.
Go on, James.
As I recall, as Susan just mentioned, there was a lot of question about the intellectual property. We are not sure who owns a lot of our archival material. Sometimes we think we own it. Sometimes producers think they own it. Sometimes other entities think they have a piece of it. And sometimes it's not who owns all of it. It's who owns part of it. I think we found... in conjunction with Mark Torres at the archives, we settled on some tapes of Studs Terkel that was clear that we owned. And those were going to be the subject of some possible experimentation. But I think ultimately, until all of these questions that have been mentioned, Stephanie agreed, and I think I don't recall specifically what the vote was in the committee, but I believe, as Beth said, it didn't get a majority vote. So we didn't decide not to do it. We just decided not to go ahead until we had more information on all of those subjects.
All right, Donna, you have a comment. Go on, Donna.
Everything I hear is very makes me very skeptical about even continue to move in this direction. It seems like something we need to just let it go. And I don't know anything about the topic, but it just seems like that. That's all I'm hearing. I think we need to let it go and focus on some of the other things.
All right. What I'll do is I will ask Lyndon and Alex to come back with more steady information. I do recall there was a direct appeal to get the Studs Terkel audio, and nothing was ever done. Nothing was ever done. So anyway, okay, so I'll put that on the back burner. Now, the second thing is the issue of the fiscal and audience data, which we have two motions. We have the motion that was passed last year by the board in March, and we have a motion that was passed by Fred, and we've not gotten any information from it. And that, of course, essentially, the bottom line is both those motions were designed to get information from the stations as to granularly how shows are making money house shows, I know we don't have the Nielsen ratings now, although one can get the Nielsen ratings from the past and do some extrapolations, but nothing has been received on that. And we have two motions already passed by the board that have essentially not been implemented to the point where we've got any data. And so, again, I'm arguing we saw that one of our colleagues got information within a week or 2 weeks, just recently. And I personally think that it's time for us to get this kind of information so we can really decide what's going on in terms of how shows and how stations are functioning. So that's a director's inspection based on motions that have already been passed by the board. So what comments do people have about that?
First off, it's Julie is your timekeeper, and we're at 10 minutes. So if we want to keep going, we need to extend.
All right, I make a motion to extend for 5 minutes on this one.
I'll second. This is Heather.
Go on, Julie. You have a comment on this? Julie?
I raised my hand when we were talking about NFTs. So, the fiscal and audience data, I do have a comment on that, which I think one of the things we should do is, you know, just ask Stephanie to, you know, give us an update at the next PMB meeting, you know, as to, you know, how she's doing getting that information from the GMs, because they report to her, and if she asks them for it, you know, it maybe it could happen pretty quickly. So that's just my thought. That's a less imperial way to go about getting the data.
Well, it's interesting. Okay, Julia, we've certainly asked for this data for almost 2 years now. But anyway, go on, Jim Sagerton. You have to unmute, Jim.
Yeah. I hear your frustration, Jim, that your motion didn't produce any results and Fred's hasn't produced any results. I'm trying to remember if there was a direction in either one of these motions as to who was supposed to do this. I think it was the PNB requesting that the general managers or the appropriate people in the stations, PDs or whatever, would provide the information. I don't remember if we got the executive director involved in it. But so I kind of agree with Julie. You know, she would be the one that would be right to implement it, with one caveat. I do recall that that Stephanie did report on this at one time. I don't remember what the context was, but she was saying that some of the general managers were saying that they simply didn't have this data. Uh-huh. Now, I didn't find that convincing particularly. But I don't know how Stephanie would go about, you know, if she asks for it and they don't give it to her, that's where a director's inspection would come in. But you have to kind of physically go to a place and look for stuff. And, you know, I'm not saying this would be the case, but if people didn't want you to find it, they could probably arrange to make sure you didn't. But, you know, maybe it's there and maybe we could find it. But, you know, that's the essence of a director's inspection. You go to a place and you look to see if it's there. And I don't know I don't think Stephanie was able to do that.
All right. Well, since we had those meetings, I've discovered that one station does this all the time. And the information is always done. It's been done for years. So the idea that it wasn't available was, let's put it this way, I'm a tad skeptical. I know in New York, the information is compiled regularly. And so we're talking about basically how they record their fundraising. So it's, you know, again, the question of patience, impatience, let's put it this way. I'm a little skeptical if people say they don't have that data, because, I'm highly doubtful that that's in fact reality. All right, Susan, go on, Susan.
Yeah, I know we have that information from KPFT, and I believe it's been provided to everybody. Can be provided to everybody. And so I think I like what Julie and what Jim are saying. Let's ask the executive director to give us an assessment of what data we have and what data we don't have. And for data we don't have, why don't we have it? What is the obstacle? And I know that KPFT has been able to really move forward on culling our program grid by, among measures that include the ability to fund themselves. So how are you? Well, let me ask Jim and James, what information do you have at WBAI and how successful are you and Linda and Berthold at unloading programs that are not generating dollars?
Well, that, of course, is another issue, but we do have information. I've seen that information. I know what that information is. But I'm just saying, objectively speaking, it's at this point long overdue for the National Board to see that information. Go on, Beth.
Thank you. Yes, I agree with Julie and James and Susan that the appropriate approach to this is through the executive director. Staff don't take their marching orders from the board. Otherwise, all the staff would have 23 bosses and be expected to jump through each of our hoops, and that's just not the way things are set up. With a request like this, we make a specific, I would put it in writing. I would submit it to Stephanie. I like the way Susan laid it out, asking for what information we have, what information we need. If there's information that we need that we don't have, what's the obstacle and what would it take to get it? And then once we start to get that all of that in place, we'd like to receive that information on a regular basis, just the way we receive regular, we're supposed to be receiving regular financial reports. We'd like to receive regular, whatever you want to call these ratings and income reports or whatever. That over time we could begin to, sort of standardize the reports and get them into a standard format so that, each station could be compared to itself over time, as well as being compared to the rest of its market and the rest of Pacifica. That's hard to do until you get things in a standardized form. But I think the approach to take is a simple business-like request to Stephanie and then have a conversation with it. And I'm going to guess she has some idea where the information is more available and where it might take more effort. But rather than mounting a hostile effort, I think the thing to do is try proper channels. Thanks.
We're at time again.
I move to extend for, we'll finish this at another 3 minutes. 3 minutes more. Have a second for that?
Second.
Okay,
Jim, you don't need seconds in committee, but you do need to ask if there's any objection to see if everybody agrees.
Any objection? Okay, go on, Jim.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, in answer to Susan's question and just by way of general comment on this subject, WBAI has had that information, but let's be frank. You know, up until a few years ago, this information was guarded like Fort Knox in Pacifica because nobody at the stations wanted anybody messing with their grids. And, you know, staff were, dominant at some stations and didn't want, their programs questioned. And we're in a new era based on the fact that we're teetering on some potentially disastrous consequences due to our financial situation. So, we have no choice. And this is not aimed at just finding weak programs and rooting them out. There's always room for programs that may not have audience or revenue because they're part of our mission. However, we can't have all the programs doing that. And so not only is this not only aimed at finding weak programs, which could then either be helped or be revamped or possibly be moved to another venue, but it's also to find the good programs. So we can share them around the network. We've been talking about sharing programs around the network for a long time, but we haven't gotten around to doing it. And so now we're in a situation where we're faced with playing the same programs over again, because if they make money in one part of the day, maybe they'll make money in another part of the day. But we know that the programs that are in that other part of the day already are not having any revenue. They have, there's, you know, there are programs that don't even have one sustaining member when, and that means generally the hosts and the producers of the program aren't even supporting their own program. So we need this data. We're in a financial crisis. We have to get it in order to make rational decisions about what way to go. So, let's get it.
All right. Julie, you had a comment on this? I saw your hand up.
I did, but then I put it down because I couldn't remember what I was going to say.
All right. Eric.
Too much baseball.
Yeah, right. Too much baseball. All right. So there's no consensus on this. And as I will remember, 15 information over a space of a year and a half. Fred has made it. So, I see we have a division of opinion about this. I think this, I've actually seen some information in detail. So to listen to people say that stations don't have to just, yes, but okay. So let me move on to the next issue. There's no consensus on it. Let me go to the cab issue in the motion. We're all familiar.
May I just, before you go on?
Yeah.
You don't need a committee to do a director's inspection.
Oh, I won't worry.
Any director can do that. Question is, can you go there and look through the files and see what you can find? You know, most stuff is electronically recorded now, so you don't need the committee for that. But I think perhaps we should say something about, you know, the committee asking Stephanie to take a lead on this to try and provide us as the PNB, or, you know, perhaps through the Strategic Planning Committee, as a repository momentarily for this information, so we can look at it and digest it and start to plan.
You're right. And I may decide to do a director's inspection anyway, because one of our colleagues got the information from the national office lickety split without any delay. So, you know, I have a feeling that the time has come to get this information, and that's that. But yes,
may I add one more thing?
Yes.
Based on some conversations with management, I think there are people in management throughout Pacifica that are ready to start thinking seriously and acting on some of these ideas. So it's not like people aren't treating it like Fort Knox anymore in many places. So, I mean, I've asked Stephanie to come forward with some plans for this kind of, these kinds of initiatives, and she is not unenthusiastic about it, and she's been thinking about it herself. So can you put some wording together that we could pass on to the PMB for perhaps their approval of asking her to start to gather this information?
And all
right, Mr. Chair.
Go on, Sue.
Mr. Chair, yeah, I want to just dovetail on what it is that James has said. You have said, Jim Dingaman, you have said there's a disagreement on this committee. I don't think there is. I think that there is agreement that it is timely to follow through with the executive director and ask her to assess the situation, report back, and gather the information and report on it. What I don't think there's agreement about is the efficacy of director's inspections, which you can do all on your own, or the efficacy of the board demanding from general managers. I think that there is a general agreement that it is appropriate to work through the executive director, and I think that that can proceed.
Okay, well, I personally have a different opinion about this, but I hear what you're saying, Susan. I think most of you are in favor of that option. Fine. So I'll draft some wording, or we can draft some language that essentially implements that. But as I say, a year and a half to 2 years is, you know, it's frankly absurd. Julie, go on.
I was just going to simply point out that I think there's a big difference between the two different requests, the one that's taken a long time and the one that got answered in days. in terms of the quantity of information, the amount of, you know, processing of that information that had to be done to put it in the kind of format. I mean, the director's request, inspection request that got answered within a few days was show me a document that basically was already existing and the person who had it was the executive director. So it was, of course, super duper easy for the ED to turn it over. You know,
and whereas it was still on the top of the pile, if you don't mind me saying.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas I think, you know, kind of asking people for data over, you know, several years, I'm not saying that it shouldn't exist and it shouldn't be readily available. I'm just saying if it's not already put together, that's what explains why it's taken people so long to come up with it. Because, you know, when does it get to be, you know, the top of the pile when, you know, people are, you know, trying to raise enough funds to keep, you know, to keep the lights on, to keep us, you know, with a roof over our head, that sort of stuff. So, you know, I completely agree. If we were a well-functioning organization, there'd be absolutely, positively no excuse for this not existing on a routine basis, but we're not that organization.
All right, Donna, you wanted to say something, Donna?
Yeah, I was just going to say, it sounds like we have a process going forward. I mean, I think the folks on this call have a consensus that it's best to work through the ED.
Okay. Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Yeah, Susan, you want to add something to that?
Just, yeah, no, I agree with the consensus. And Julie reminds me that some of the requests have been for data over long periods of time. So they were voluminous and something that has become very clear to me at KPFT and at Pacifica, our record keeping sucks. So finding out recent information that should be readily available, it seems to me, is the place to start. And there are all kinds of things that have happened industry-wide that we can look at and surmise about, you know, multi-platform aging of our listeners, all that sort of stuff. But let's get the current data in hand. And that's what we really need to be focusing on first.
All right. Well, as I say, some of the stations already have the current data, they're not sharing that. And for the stream, the reason why the historical data is important is between 2008 and 2023, all the stations in the network, including WBAI, in terms of their respective position in their markets, declined 400 to 700%. In terms of their respective position in their markets. I'm talking about every station in the network. That's based on the data. So those are the kind of things that one needs to get to see and to sit there and think that the stations they don't know where their Nielsen ratings are unless they threw them out. They don't take records about how the shows do during marathons. I have to say I have a little incredulity about that. Go on, Jim. Jim, you have your hand up?
Yeah, I do. I had to unmute. I am a little skeptical as to, you know, whether anybody's even trying to find this information or to put it together. But I don't see postponing this and coming back later. I think we could hammer together some language here if we took a little time, you know, 5 or 10 minutes to get something that we could pass on to the board and basically something that Stephanie could use to help this process along. I think it's a process she believes in, you know, strengthening the grids and, you know, getting more revenue coming in, you know, helping programs that need it, you know, giving more a broader platform to programs that are more successful, you know, especially in this time when we need money so badly. So let's try and think of some language we could put together right here and now so we could bring it to the PMB at the next meeting. And I think Stephanie would welcome this.
All right. Jim, why don't you think about that language?
Oh, no. Just because I suggested it doesn't put the word on me. We can work on it together. What are we talking about here? Let's make some sausage. It's not that hard.
All right.
So the Strategic Planning Committee recommends to the PNB that the executive director be requested to gather data about fundraising and the fundraising
and
of
market
individual
share
programs. Go ahead.
Fundraising and market share?
Yeah, yeah, good. For individual programs.
And audience data.
And audience data. With an eye to strengthening the grid.
All right.
That's all.
With an eye to strengthening the grid. Does anybody else have any?
Grids. Grids, plural.
The grids.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
all
good.
Right. The Planning Committee recommends to the PNB that the executive director gather fundraising data, market share, marketing, fundraising, audience data for market share is always implicit in audience stuff. I would just eliminate market share because that comes straight from the audience data. Gather fundraising data and audience, share information. That's satisfactory.
Yes, for the individual programs at all the stations.
For the individual programs.
And it doesn't say every iota of information that was ever created or even complete information about everything that's being done. Just get some basic information so we can start to think about it and, you know, work on it.
With the goal to strengthen the grid.
Yeah.
All right, fine. Does everybody agree on that language?
I would maybe say is strengthening the grids and the economic vitality of the network. Because we're not just strengthening the grids. We need to make some money here to stay alive.
Yeah. All right.
Sounds good.
All right. If somebody wants to write that down, because I'm scribbling it on a piece of paper while we're doing this. Heather and Donna, you had some comments? Donna, go on.
Yeah, I was just going to say, is there a way to, would there be a way to note those very new programs that are just getting started? We have if we're looking for recent information, we've got quite a few new programs at PFW that are, you know, just getting started. I don't know. We want information from them, but I think we'd want to also flag that they are new programs like established within the past year or two. And then this is their first funding cycle.
All right. Mm-hmm. No, that's a fair point. I mean, that's obvious. If some show's brand new, one has to sort of treat it a little different.
Jim?
Yeah.
I think that's a very good point, but I don't think we necessarily need to put it in here now because all we're asking for now is data about all the programming. That will come when we start to analyze it. And, of course, it's not just us doing that. It's going to be the executive director, the PDs, you know, the PDs as of the next meeting, I think, are going to be participating in the management meetings with the general managers, at least to some extent. And, you know, it's they who can start using this information and seeing, you know, who could use this program over here and maybe we could put this one over there. You know, they can bring what they've got to the table and with the data, we can start to see how to use it.
Well, I know. One thing, of course, is there's the interoperability issue. Because everybody speaks out, oh, my God, we're going to bring a show from another station into our grid, even though this show works really well in that grid. Maybe it'll work in our grid in New York or elsewhere. You know, it's just always.
Well, as we know, it doesn't always work, but we can point to examples. You know, Margaret Prescott worked very well in New York. You know, different shows work well in different markets. Does not mean to say that one show will work well everywhere, but let's at least start playing with it. That's, you know, the biggest asset we've got right now is our existing assets. We've got archives. We've got programming from five different stations plus affiliates. We've got lists of lapsed members. We've got lists of people that who have been members over the past 10 or 20 years. Those are the assets we can mine to try and pull ourselves out of this financial situation before we start losing major assets.
Right. Right. Very true. All right, Heather, go on, Heather.
Well, it might be inappropriate for me to bring this up here, but I know I've mentioned this with a lot of people. I think we need to make sure that the programs in all the stations, I mean, whether it be the Pacifica stations, the affiliate stations, we need to be promoting and writing actually articles about what we're doing and about the importance of the programs that we have now and that have been there for years as well. I don't know how much the producers are doing anything like this, or the radio stations are, to promote the programs in other platforms other than radio itself. So I just bring that up, Jim. I know I've said this a lot, and I think probably what I need to do is to, I know, come up with some other kind of entity to make sure that we do this for all of our various stations and programs. Don't worry. We don't need to have a long discussion about this right now, but I'm just bringing it up because I think it's important. And the reason I'm saying this is I've mentioned to almost everyone probably on this meeting tonight is that media has changed radically. There are so many other platforms now. And I think as radio producers, we need to be a part of that as well in terms of promoting what we do. Don't worry about it, Jim. I just wanted to bring that up. It's important about
it. You're right 100%. I mean, the publicity aspect in all the stations is particularly undeveloped. All right. So we got a little consensus on this. I'll write the line out. You guys can tear it apart. I'll send it out and, guys can, you forgot this. You know, that's good. You can correct me after it's done. So I'd like to move on to the cab issue in motion. Now, all of us, Susan may not be as familiar with this, fighting and arguing over the, issue of getting the cab resuscitated. We want to find out what's going on in the station. I think part of the, language difference was, Julie, I know we were talking about this last week or 2 weeks ago, was a question of who we want to have the information reported from and who's responsible for creating the cabs, which essentially is the governing body of the station. That's something that's always forgotten. And I think I sent out to a lot of people the statutory information about the community advisory boards that the feds have. But part of it was using language that would allow a whole bunch of different stakeholders to get involved in the process. That includes the general manager, the local station boards, and the cabs to report what their status is. And I think that was where we got hung up on that language. And Julie, is that correct? Is that how you recall the arguments that were going on?
Exactly. And, you know, it's sort of like who answers to who on this and who can compel.
Right.
And yeah, so go.
Right. Because, you know, we have some cap, you know, I mean, look, frankly, everything in the whole network has to be rehabilitated. Let's be blunt. But and one thing I would say about the strategic planning papers that Stephanie did, the gist of it was essentially the need to change the culture within the network, because it's a very atavistic, nihilistic, destructive culture. Who can win? Who can overcome the other person? It's like playing rugby or something like that, the way people have it. And I that's my personal opinion. It's very atavistic. But any event, that I think was where we got hung up. Who was going to call this? Who's going to actually, who are the stakeholders in a cab? You know, who are the stakeholders? The cab members, the GM, and the local station board. And Frank, I think there's sort of a multiplicity, and that's where we were hung up on the language. But Jim, go on, Jim. What's your opinion about this? Jim.
Jim, yeah, once again, I had to unmute. Sorry. I got some background noise here. The resolution, I think we were arguing about who should do what. And right. My thinking was everybody, as you basically just said, everybody's got a stake in this. There's the cabs themselves, which have a certain amount of independence that they're supposed to have. However, the cab membership, according to the CPB regulations, is supposed to be appointed, or the way they become members is supposed to be determined by the local station boards, or the station boards, it says. I think
management Governance.
Right. So whether that's the PMB or the local station board is a question. We've always done it with the local station boards because they were, you know, at the state. It says the station governing body should do it. So that sounds like in our system, the LSB, but of course most stations don't have LSBs and the CPB would rather we didn't and all of that. But anyway, the LSBs who I think are appointing the members of at least some of the cabs, the cabs themselves, management, which has the responsibility to certify under the CPB rules again, to certify that the cabs are functioning and operating as they should. That's local management. And then also, you know, our national management is making an application to the CPB as one entity. So, you know, probably they should be the ones gathering all of this once again to put it together, for when it comes up in the CPB. So I think we shouldn't try to pick one or the other. We should have everybody giving what they can or will. And if we have some gaps here and there, okay, but we'll get as much as we can from as many of those players as we can.
All right. And the whole purpose of it was to see, go on, Sue.
Yeah, no, quickly. What I'd like to understand is essentially what is the goal of this exercise? Because this is a place where the Pacifica bylaws create a confusion about whose job is which. And as the conversations I've had with Stephanie, the CPB doesn't understand why there's an LSB and a CAB. So if our primary purpose is to clean up our act so that we position ourselves to be able to be successful in getting CPB funding, then it seems to me we should be going to what is the Occam's razor, the fastest, shortest way to accomplish this. And so putting fewer impediments on creating a functioning cab, it seems to me would be better. I would just say from the standpoint of KPFT, since I've been on the board, this is my second year, we have never named the cab. Management has never named the cab. I don't know where they came from. I think that there are people who are working hard and they're putting their hearts and souls into it and they think that they are serving the general good. But basically what they have just talked about is DEI training. I was on the cab long ago. We did a big survey and came back with lots of information about where our listeners were. And that work has not been done by the cab at all. So we're saying grace over so many things right now and we're barely holding it together and adding more burdens onto any piece of this system. It seems to me is not a wise thing to do now. I would suggest we take the cab requirement down to the studs, have a simple functioning cab at each station that meets quarterly, that is named by some combination of the GMs and the LSBs, and that provides feedback so that we can, so that we can record reporting, whatever. But figuring out what a cab should be in the realm in which the CPB doesn't understand why there are LSBs and cabs, I think is something that's going to be really hard for us to grapple with.
All right. Go on, Doc.
Yeah, I agree with Susan up to the point of, I don't think that the LSBs should be selecting cab members. I think, we're at our station, what we're doing is, getting in, applications and not, put people to nominate themselves. And I think that the cab is supposed to be, as I understand it, is supposed to be independent of the management, independent of the, and independent of the LSBs. And I think that is a better way to get to the truth about, what's really happening in the community and how our programming is meeting the needs or not of the community. So I would, I do agree. We have our hands full with a lot of things. And my feeling would be to let them be independent and just to give them guidelines and to as to, you know, how often to meet and, you know, what kind of things, for example, that they need, because we're restarting this. We've had a cab in the past, but it got to be, they didn't meet very often. So I think it's a good chance to and get those cabs started at the local level, but I don't think we need to burden ourselves with overseeing or selecting and appointing and all that kind of stuff. I don't think so.
All right. Go on, Beth.
Thank you. Am I unmuted?
Yeah. Go on.
Yes, I am. Okay. Thank you. I put a lot of time and effort into restarting our cab at KPFK my first couple of years here, and was glad to, when someone showed up willing and able to take on that task and carry it forward. And I promised him when he agreed to do that I would stick with him and back him up. I just didn't want to have to be the person to take the lead on that further. And it wouldn't have been appropriate anyway, because I'm governance. So now we have one. I keep in close touch with him. He put a lot of effort into trying to set up a cab council among all the Pacifica stations. And that has been, they've had some level of success though there at that. I don't know that it's what we would, you know, hope for and aspire to eventually, but it's put me in way of hearing about developments around the network. And one of my concerns, I'm happy to hear from really any entity that wants to report on the status of their cab. Because that's really what I think we're looking here for right now, is just a basic baseline status report. Where do we stand? Where do we have functional cabs? Where don't we? Where are we close? Where are we failing? Where are we doing well? What I have heard is that there's one station that has a cab in name only, if that, and that what they said about that locally was that they were told that they should just sort of, they were there as a placeholder, and they should just sort of bide their time dormantly, and not, that's my word, because there would be new bylaws in place soon and a new organization, and so all of this would be swept, this order would be swept away, and none of it would matter. And so that's their plan, and that's been going on for more than a year. And my concern is that in so doing, if it's true, if it's accurate that there's a cab who's operating under that premise, then that could put at risk certainly their own CPB funding, but I wonder if it would call into question the validity of the rest of what we're doing too. And I just think we should know. And so I'd like to have an accounting from each cab itself about where do they think they stand and what do they think they're doing and what is it they think they're complying with or not. And anything beyond
Chair,
that,
we're
you know,
at time.
I'm happy to have.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. I move to extend 5 minutes on it. Any objections? All right. Hearing none. Go on, Jim.
Thank you. I want to just agree with what a lot of people have said and try to pull it together. The cab requirements are pretty simple. If you go to KPFTX, there's a link to them on the public-facing page of KPFTX. It's right below the olive branches of the Pacifica logo. You click on it where it says click here. Takes you to the cab regulations from the CPB. And they're pretty simple. And what we should be doing, in my opinion, is gathering the information about what's going on at each station, where there seems to be a functioning cab that's working okay, that complies with the CPB regulations. We should let it go on. We don't need to mess with things that are working. In places where things are not working, we have to do something to kickstart those situations, because yes, it will affect everybody's eligibility for CPB funds. Stephanie has said many times that all of the stations have to be in compliance when our application is considered, or else none of the stations are going to get any money. So we need to just make sure all the stations follow the CPB guidelines. Now, in 2010, apparently the Pacifica National Board passed a resolution saying how all of the cabs should be created and operated and making rules that should be followed. That was well and good in its time. Apparently it was not, I don't know if it was ever implemented, but over time it certainly stopped being implemented. And we find ourselves now where we have cabs that have been created in different ways, they're following different procedures. And okay, maybe someday we can get them all on the same track, but that's not necessary. What we need now is to make sure we have functioning cabs at each station that at least meets the minimum CPB regulations, and we're good to go. And so that may mean rescinding that 2010 resolution from the PNB, because we don't want the CPB saying, well, look, you have policies about how you're supposed to run your cabs, and you're not following your own policies. That's a no-no with them. So perhaps we need to rescind that, and then just go with what we've got, and where we've got something that's either not functional or it's dormant or whatever, we have to do something to kickstart that.
All right. Well, it's pretty good. I'd like to see the 2010. And
breaking
it's pretty
up,
good. Well, I'd like to see that motion from 2010. And it's pretty clear to me that all the cabs need a lot of work, period. Nothing's perfect. One cab decides to concentrate on diversity training. That's cool, but that's not necessarily the function of the cabs. And, you know, other cabs, decide to operate with, you know, waiting for bylaws to change. Well, that doesn't help us right now. So we just got to get a sense of what the hell's going on out there. Go on, Susan.
Yeah, I agree with you, Jim. Both Jims. It's probably a good idea to take an inventory. What cabs are functioning? How many people are on them? How often do they meet? How are they named? What have they focused on? Our cab, at KPFT, I think is dedicated and active. But one of the issues that we face is it's very hard to recruit people to run for the LSB and recruit people to serve on the cab. And so a lot of focus was given to recruiting people to run for the LSB. And now we're kind of looking at, you know, who wants to serve on the cab and can there be a good diversity of folks? I think the major, as far as I can tell, the major way that we are out of compliance is the cab hasn't been named. And what an understanding of my reading of the CPB regs is that yes, the cab is independent of governance, but the cab is named by governance. So that we have got to move ourselves into the responsibility that the governance is supposed to have for achieving, for assuring that this function is operating correctly, occurs annually, all that sort of thing. And I know that we have not as yet tackled that at KPFT, even though we've got people serving on the cab who I think are working very hard and doing, you know, worthwhile work.
All right. Go on, Heather. Heather, you have to unmute.
And we're at time again, Jim.
So thanks everyone for sharing all this, and our time is up.
Hold tight, Heather. I just moved to extend the discussion for 3 minutes. Go on.
Okay, thanks. I'll be quick. So I appreciate this discussion about cabs. Is there anywhere we can get information about cab entities within Pacifica? Is there a composite anywhere or an article or something about this? Could anybody tell me? Do we have anything like that? No?
Well, I ran one for a long time and Marianne did, but anyway, no, I don't think there's any kind of memoir about running cabs.
I think Stephanie had a meeting of all the cabs.
Oh, thanks. I'll give her a call.
When she was preparing for the CPB application, I think she had a meeting of all the cabs.
I'm going to give her a call then. Thank you so much. Thanks. All right.
Go on, Beth. Beth, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, I had to unmute. Thanks. Yeah, does anyone present have a copy of that 2010 resolution? Because I hear it mentioned a lot. Clearly, it is significant. Maybe we need to revoke or revise it. The governance committee could take a look at that. But until I see it, until I have a copy of it, there's not much I can do about it or even assess what needs to happen next with it. So does anyone here have a copy of that or know where to find it?
No.
Nope. Chairman, speak.
Come on, Jim.
Yeah, I believe I've got a copy of it. I'm going to have to search my email to find it, but I do believe I've seen it. And so therefore I probably have it in my email. I also just wanted to add to Susan's, she had two legs on the stool, about the cabs are independent, but they're named, the members are named by governance. And, the third leg on that stool was that management certifies to the CPB, completes the report. It's like a 28-page report that the CAB is functioning and it's, you know, adequately meeting the requirements of the CPB. So it's a three-legged stool, and that's where we should go to all three legs of the stool to get the information, to do the survey, to find out what's happening at each station, and then we'll find that resolution, rescind it if necessary, and just go with what we've got and fix it where we have to.
All right. Well, one thing before I call, you can take that out. I think it's on us on the LS who've had the experience in the past, people on the PMB. We basically have to take a role in, you know, talking with members of the CABs and going over particularly the programming issues, which they are responsible for looking at, and sort of getting in, you know, educating some of our colleagues about it. Cause sometimes, I hear CABs is sloppy to say the least. And we want to make sure that these guys are doing a good job. All right, Julie, go on, Julie.
Well, two things. One, our time is up, but I should have said that second so that I could say the thing I was going to say first, which is, if somebody can tell me what meeting in 2010, so I went back to, you know, Otis does a lovely job with KPFTX. And, you know, you can go back to 2010 and you can filter just PNB meetings and you can see the meetings. You know, now the problem with 2010 is, I don't see minutes for every meeting, right? But I'm happy to take the minute. I mean, and this is if Sagerton has trouble finding this, I'm happy to take the meetings for which I do see minutes and download those minutes, and it will take no time at all to do a word search to find CAB in there, you know, but it's entirely plausible that one of the things that I'll find is that, you know, it's at one of those other meetings. Cause back, if you recall 2010, the PNB would still meet in person. And so, you know, like, if I wanted to, you know, see some of those meetings, I would have to actually listen to the audio for them. And that's the thing I'm trying to avoid. I'm happy to help find this motion, but only, you know, by devoting limited time to it. So
it's a 2010 motion on the CABs. And if anybody out there is listening, has a copy of it, please send it to the PNB so we can see it. Unfortunately, we don't have a database. We should to go through all this stuff. And Jim, if you can, I'll just put out a call. I'll work my little magic to see if I can find it. At this point, coming out of this in terms of recommendations for CAB, motion that we're going to probably argue about the next PNB meeting, are there any conclusions about this that we want to make? All right, hearing none. I assume.
I'm sorry, Jim. Sorry, I was speaking up, and once again, I was muted. I would like to share something. There are some out there who seem to enjoy, to a certain extent, I can't think of any other word to describe it, pointing out that this station or that station doesn't have a cab. It's not a legitimate cab. It's not a perfect cab. And that is deleterious to the benefit of the entire foundation. I want to stress again, even though at some stations we may have cabs that are controlled by the other faction, if you will, or people that we don't like, or, you know, I think at this point we have to just put up with what we have until we can change it gradually, but deal with what we have. The only exception being a cab that is not functioning. We can't have a dormant cab.
Right, right, exactly. And nothing's perfect in this outfit. Okay. We all know that. All right. Can we move on to the next thing? I guess we don't have I guess we've sort of been talking about the kind of things we want to introduce in the PNB discussion. I personally agree that we have to put in several layers of governance to deal with it. LSBs, GMs, and the, cabs themselves, because we want to find out what the hell's going on. Okay. And that's the gist of it. All right. Any other comments on this before I move to the next issue? All right, hearing none, I'm going to talk about this advisory council motion that was passed several years ago. This was passed.
Beth, with a point of order.
Go on, Beth.
It's 10 o'clock. It's 10 o'clock, where, at least where you are. It's 7 o'clock here. We've reached time.
Well, I put time certain ending at 10:30, Beth. Okay, that's what on this. Now I'm going to move to the advisory council motion. This was passed a few years ago, and as I understand it, I believe I sent out the wording earlier, but some of you were on the PNB when it was passed. And it's my understanding that something like this would be useful. Let me give you an example right now. There is a $500 million fundraising effort going on by the MacArthur Foundation, and they are basically raising $500 million to reinforce local media. And there's another $150 million effort going on that's being led by the Shorenstein Center at Harvard. So you've got $650 million to basically reinforce radio, local radio, to serve the function of the collapse of print media and other media in the past 50 years in the United States. Now, this is a lot of work to go and cultivate these people. And as far as I'm concerned, part of the reason to have an advisory council populated was to have luminaries who could actually go out and do this for us, who could actually call up different people at MacArthur or somebody who's recognized and has a national imprimatur, et cetera. So this motion was passed by the PNB and has never been effectuated. So I'm wondering what people's opinion is in terms of actually – creating an advisory council at this point in time.
I've got an opinion.
Go on, Sue.
Sure. So I talked to Stephanie about this when I first came onto the board, and her suggestion was that management would be able to assemble advisory groups about specific matters. I was absolutely appalled by the advisory council motion that was adopted by the PNB the year before I came on, and I objected to it from the get-go. It was really a place for former PNB members to park themselves for 5 years. And that former PNB members are not the people that we need to call upon. You have, Jim, a very good idea of the types of people who we would want to enlist. I think that at this time, when we are in essentially financial collapse, that people will probably want to be able to have a more informal relationship. And I know I've worked with many boards and many advisory councils. And if people do not know what their job is when they come on the advisory council, they either do come on because they aren't very sophisticated and they cause harm, or they refuse to come on because they don't know what the heck it is. Right. So I really am opposed to populating the advisory council as adopted by the PNB. but I think it might be very useful to assemble advisory councils more informally that are subject specific.
All right. Well, anyone else want to jump in on this? I actually had a conversation with a professor at Santa Barbara who turns out to have written her dissertation on Spanish radio. And I found that person particularly insightful as to the whole issue of what works in terms of Hispanic broadcasting on radio in the United States and does. And I'm part Cuban and Spanish, so I take seriously this issue. To me, it's not a joke. And I've actually had colleagues question my identity. It sort of uses the hell out of me. I mean, they would never do that to anybody else because I use different terminology. But nevertheless, that's part of my background. And so I felt that this woman, who was absolutely brilliant, she got a Fulbright, she teaches this issue, she came up with all sorts of interesting ideas, and she's in the Los Angeles area. I thought that person would be great to be on an advisory council like this. I also felt that this person at Harvard, Professor Patterson, who is the person raising $150 million and who is a big advocate to reinforce local media, he'd be perfect on that. I figured Noam Chomsky would be perfect on that. I figure a whole bunch of luminaries that we all can come up with. Susan Sarandon would be perfect for this. I mean, there's lots of people. Oh, I see. Oh, Susan, come on. there's lots of people who we could get to help us. And I tend to agree with you on the PNB issue. I tend to agree with Susan on that one. But some people on the PNB are not exactly, lightweights, but I do agree that it's important to get luminaries, not, Pacifica luminaries, but luminaries in our society and culture. And, I just wonder what people think about populating it now with people who we could help, because who knows? Somebody might have some, access to large sums of money. I mean, really. I mean, it's not beyond the realm of possibility. The amount of money we need to raise to get out of this mess, when you look at it objectively, is really not that much in the scheme of how nonprofits operate in America. But do any other people have opinions about this? So let me just, before I bring it again, let me just see. Did anybody else want to comment?
Beth.
Go on, Beth.
Yeah, I was on the strategic planning committee while this was being discussed and voted on, and I was not a fan then. I mean, in principle, I recognize that advisory boards have the potential to be a useful asset. But as it was construed, I had pretty much exactly the same reservations that Susan articulated. And so it passed without my support. And so I would point out that right now we do have something on the books. And so we're not just here to invent whatever we think would suit us better. We need to start with what we have. And either we need to implement it, or we need to modify it and move forward from there. But we're not here with a blank slate. One of the other concerns I had about it is that Pacifica is such a factionally divided organization. And honestly, I think it's tearing us root from branch. And I worry that this could be easily just another forum for a subject to capture by either side, by whatever faction. And I don't see anything in what was written that would prevent that, that would even acknowledge that that's part of our dynamic and needs to be guarded against.
All right, that's a fair comment. Go on, Sue. You had a response before I bring Julie and Jim in.
Yeah. Okay, so first, I agree with Beth that there is the possibility of essentially weaponizing the advisory council with people who are champions of one faction or another. I think that is something that not only can happen, would be very likely to. And if you're looking to people to raise money, I've structured many boards. And as Julie has said, this is not a give or get board. This is not a board that comes together self-nominated with people who were representing wealth, wisdom, and work, okay? So the idea that you bring up, Jim Dingleman, of having people who have access to deep pockets, you have to have an agreement with them from the get-go that their job is to bring, give, or raise money. And if you don't, they just tell you what to do and themselves do nothing. So I think Beth brings up a very important issue, which is the motion on the books is really crafted in a way that is not helpful. And if there is going to be an effort to really put together a powerful advisory council, I think it needs to happen hand in glove with management and be responsive to management rather than be responsive to factions on our board.
All right. Well, let me respond to that very quickly, Susan. I agree with your sentiment. I do think, though, that I've seen management in action when we tried to have a national fundraiser, and I wasn't impressed with their collective wisdom, which was implemented in terms of their outcome. Pacifica has had people in that category in the past. I'm thinking of when Mr. Goodman of Goodman, Schwerner, and Cheney. She was a board member, very wealthy woman, was access to the Bergdorf Goodman fortune, and she was a key person in Pacifica. She was probably behind getting the church for WBAI and the person who created WBAI. I mean, we've had people like this in the past. So I hear you. We want to avoid weaponization and all that. But, you know, what we do need now, as I've mentioned, here's an example. MacArthur money, $500 million. Who's going to sell it to MacArthur? Who's going to take the time to do that to sell Pacifica? Go on, Jim. Jim, unmute.
Okay. Yeah, I'm agreeing with a lot of things I'm hearing. I also am concerned about the weaponization. So one solution to that might be that nobody who's been on the PNB or, you know, who's been on any one of the local boards, this would be for another group of people to be on. Especially if we're looking for luminaries or people with names, who could, access, funding, donors. Another thing that I was concerned about when this was conceived was the membership being up to 25. I thought that was too much, and that lent itself to a kind of an arms race with, you know, different factions trying to get, you know, one more member than the other side. Again, turning it into another place we could exhaust our energies trying to get dominance on, which is just, you know, as has been said here, exhausting us. So those are just two ideas that I think might take some of the sting out of it. And I also liked what I heard about having, this is something I've had a conversation with Stephanie about as well. Having small groups of people work with management on specific things that they have expertise in without dragging them into the grind of the committee structure where, you know, we don't always put our best foot forward. And frequently we scare people away who, you know, could possibly do us a lot of good if they were shielded from that to some extent. So, yeah, having management have the ability to have small groups of people who have expertise in a certain area, especially if it's fundraising, would be helpful too. So maybe this kind of a council, if again, we have something in place, we need to work with what we have. Perhaps if we could change it so that it had an ability to function with management in a more sheltered environment, that might be helpful as well.
All right, Julie. Go on, Julie. You have to unmute, Julie. You're still muted.
You have to be able to operate your mouth too. So I think I was on the strategic advisor, strategic planning committee, when we passed the motion for the advisory board, whatever it was called, and then I was the chair of the board implementing that, and there really was a lot of pushback, right? And I think it really was, you know, kind of wrapped up in all this factional stuff. And to be honest, you know, I gave up because it was clear that it was going to be another, you know, sort of factional weapon. And I just didn't see that as furthering. You know, I hadn't thought about that specifically when we were talking about it as a motion. You know, I sort of, you know, understood the, well, it'd be great to have these luminaries, right? Who could help us, but, you know, but now I've been doing this long enough that I have, you know, serious second thoughts and reservations about the ability of this. And then the other thing that I wanted to point out was, you know, on a traditional give or get board, what happens is the give or get people are on the board. So, you know, kind of the reason that they're willing to work hard to raise money for an organization is because they also get a policymaking voice in how that organization is run. Now, a lot of us in Pacifica are, you know, kind of like dead against rich people having, you know, undue influence on the organization. But the point is, that's how most give or get boards, even for progressive lefty organizations, work, right? I cannot frankly imagine, let's just assume for the moment that I was a person of means and, you know, was being one of the people, you know, considered to be on, you know, the advisory board for, or advisory council, whatever it was that we were calling it for Pacifica. You know, it's like, why on earth would I be willing to help you all raise money when you all, you know, get to engage in the vanity part of the project in terms of like running the organization? You know, if I'm going to raise all this money for you, I'm certainly going to, you know, want to have more to say about how the organization is run, you know, to the tune of, you know, if I'm going to raise a lot of money for you, I want to make sure that it's not being poured down the drain and invested poorly, right? And so that's the sense in which, you know, I mean, it's great to toss out these names. I mean, a lot of these people, honest to God, they would be fabulous if we could get a hold of them. But imagine the conversation you have with them to get them to serve on this advisory council. They have no power and we want them to raise money, you know? And so it's like, maybe we're doing this kind of, you know, sorry, because this is the stream, but ask backwards, right? You know, I mean, I don't know, you know, how I think about the world is in incentives, right? And what incentives do people face? And this one just strikes me as being, you know, really just backwards, frankly. So, you know, as much as I may have supported it at the time, you know, I have serious reservations for those two reasons. And oh, the second reason I raised my hand was because we're out of time.
The logical positivist economist in you, Julie. All right. Anyway.
And she did it right that time.
Yeah, I did.
The logical positivist
economist. All right. Yeah, Jim, you want to make some last comment on this?
No, I'm good.
All right, fine.
Now, I will say one thing final. I see where Julie is coming from on this, and I see the practical difficulties of it. And I'll tell you, there's only one thing I can think of that's worse than a Pacifica where rich people are coming in, even if they are left-leaning or, you know, simpatico to a certain extent with us, and running Pacifica, and that is that we go out of business completely and we go off the air and we fall silent. So maybe we can make an accommodation somehow where we can have the best of both worlds.
Well, and it's very amusing. I always hear people say, why can't we get some lefty millionaire to give us money? You know, and I'm saying, well, what lefty millionaire would do that without any provisos? All right, Heather, last comment. Heather, you have to unmute.
My apology. I do mention, we don't need to go into a lot of details about this, but I do think that on Pacifica, we need to develop a national fundraising initiative right? Which would include people from all the various stations. So Jim, I know we can't go into the details about this. It's already been brought up to a degree, but I think we do need to explore this all together. That's it. We'll talk later about it.
Right. Well, I personally think we have to have such a mobilization of volunteers into all the stations right now. I'm talking about 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 people. We have to make and have objective phone calls with every single listener member. Aside from all the people who have lapsed, we have to really have a conversation with everybody as to what the hell's going on and what they want us to do. Where should we move forward? Because obviously that'll help us raise additional revenue, but we really have to get a sense of, you know, where people are at. What do they want to support? What do they think? Where do they think we've gone wrong? Why do they think people are leaving in droves? What do they think we should do next? Anyway, that's my opinion. Now, the next thing I wanted to move to is the underwriting motion. The underwriting motion was passed as a temporary measure that's to go into the wild blue yonder in November. And there have been aspects of the underwriting motion that have actually been positively implemented. I know in New York we've raised about $100,000 with the New York City Department of Transportation, the New York City New York City government and the New York State government as an example. And underwriting, of course, we went through all these big battles about it. I wasn't around when you guys were fighting about it, but we passed the motion finally. And I personally think that we have a lot of provisos in there to prevent, you know, we're not going to take money from Lockheed Martin. The NYPD, for example, called up recently and wanted to put ads to advertise for cops in New York City. And they decided not to do that. And I personally think it'd be interesting to see what kind of cop would come from a Pacifica ad, but that's another issue. So the question is, I personally think the underwriting motion should be made permanent. And it's not a question. Look at all the issues of revenue streams. The model of just depending on listener members is not adequate enough. That's clear. And so the underwriting is just to provide additional income with all sorts of stipulations that are in congruence with a mission statement. So I wonder what the opinion of everybody is to make the underwriting motion. Any comments? Go on, Susan.
Yeah, naturally I have comments. You all are going to be really unhappy I'm attending these meetings.
That's all right.
And anyway, as you know, I was one of the very strong supporters of our moving forward. I think that the motion that was adopted was really kind of a rambling policy piece, and that moving, and it had lots of stipulations. I suggest that there be a motion to establish as a permanent authorization. And let me make one other comment. Beth reminded us all at the time that there was no prohibition against underwriting. And so therefore, the stations didn't need this pilot project to authorize them to move forward. And I know that KPFT was as well. I think it might make sense for there to be kind of a policy statement about underwriting is authorized if it meets, you know, certain requirements, and have it stated very simply rather than having it be a 5-page dissertation.
I can see you didn't go to Smith. Beth, your comments.
Thank you. Do you hear me? Am I unmuted?
Yep. Go on.
Okay. Thanks. My concern about this is that, first, exactly what Susan says about what was passed previously was long and rambling and not clear and not to the point and could be improved on. And I'm not even clear now whether that's the same thing that has been languishing at the end of our agenda for months now, waiting to be addressed as the revised underwriting motion. And is this a proposal to adopt whatever that, my understanding was that the previous, whatever came
to the PNB. The wording had not passed the committee without the committee had approved kind of on principle, a general idea that we wanted to do something about underwriting, but that we had not finalized the wording and that that was yet to happen. And so are you proposing that we now finalize the thing that never actually really happened? Because I think it needs work. I think we need underwriting. I think we need to be clearer than we are. So I think we need to actually address it.
All right. Well, yes, indeed. That was the motion that's been dangling that we agreed in principle was supposed to be rewritten. We can rewrite it. No one's opposing that. But the question is the gist of it, of course, we've been carrying through since we passed it, since a year ago. And the result is that I believe a whole bunch of stations have implemented it in varying ways. So I hear you both, Susan and Beth. You know, we have existing language. It can be, you know, streamlined, whatever. But, you know, we don't, obviously, we're not going to do that today. But I just wanted to get it from people. Heather, go on, Heather.
I don't know. Maybe I don't need to add anything to this. I'm just so glad to have a discussion about underwriting because, as some of you all might know, my work has been with Black farmers and in cooperative economic development for years. And so the thing that's important for Pacifica stations to understand is that there are entities out there that are of the mission and so forth that reflects Pacifica altogether. So it's important that we reach out to folks because I know that they would want to support what we do. That's what I wanted to say. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Julie.
I just want to confirm that is the thing that's been, you know, tagging along. I think the thing that, when we were still, employing John Tatum as the parliamentarian, the point that he made was that the motion as that got passed by the PNB was kind of interleaved. I mean, it doesn't have these words in it, but a whole bunch of whereas clauses, whereas, therefore be it resolved, whereas, therefore be it resolved. And what you do when you do a properly organized motion is you put all the whereases at the beginning and then you put all the resolving clauses at the end. And so that was the problem with the motion. And I tried to make it simpler when it came to the PNB by saying, oh, well, the only this very beginning part was the actual motion. The rest of it is, you know, just like stuff that went along with that. And I got a lot of pushback from people. So, I mean, there's a way to do it. You know, you could incorporate by reference a policy document that has all this other stuff in it. I mean, and I appreciate all the hard work that went into it, but you know, there's got to be something that's a whole lot simpler that says, this is what we're going to do. Right. And it is true that, I think the WPFW, you know, one of the things that happened as a result of this motion is WPFW, I think probably always had some, underwriting going on with, some local jazz clubs. And now we can do it way more openly.
Because right,
it's clear that it's not against Pacifica policy.
Thank
you. I was on the board at the time and I offered to rewrite it and I found it to be incredibly a huge waste of time to try to rewrite it. So my thought was it had a six month sunset on it and it was a pilot project. So my thought was write a whole new motion on the basis of what has worked and not worked going forward. And I would offer to do that and bring it to the committee at a future meeting. I do not want to rework that mangle of a motion. Okay. It was not written as a motion. It was written as a thought piece. So, I'd be happy to kind of survey. I've worked with Ursula and others. I'd be happy to survey all of you about what is working at your stations and try to glean what the key concerns were that seemed to be boiled down in that motion and write a plain old ordinary motion to be considered in this committee.
All right. You want to do that, Susan? Go ahead. Do it. All right. Okay. So, Jim, go on, Jim.
Yeah. Thank you. Couple of things. I remember when underwriting was being discussed, there were some who were expressing grave doubts about it because there were requirements for reporting of underwriting income. And if you didn't do it right, you could run afoul of, you know, licenses and, you know, IRS and such, tax-free status. And I remember, you know, it was indicated that there was some underwriting going on at some of the stations or effectively what might be underwriting that was not necessarily following all of those requirements. And so I'm somewhat relieved to hear that, you know, maybe it's not prohibited by Pacifica bylaws, but I'm concerned that we may not be doing it if we are doing it in complete compliance with other requirements. So I would want to spend a lot of time looking into that a little further. And one other thing, which is something that a few individuals in Pacific absolutely go apoplectic about, which is underwriting for specific programs. They feel that that's the first step on the road to perdition because it's that slippery slope that leads to loss of editorial control and, you know, capture of your editorial content by, you know, the people doing, you know, who are paying for the underwriting. So, but unfortunately, I think, you know, we get offers and frequently when people come with a plan to underwrite, they specifically want to underwrite a particular program. So I think we need to look at that and make a realistic choice about whether it's even practical to do underwriting if, you know, without the ability to underwrite a particular program. The kind of underwriting we're doing at WBAI, which is these public service announcements, there are some stations that do similar things elsewhere that are PBS stations or college stations that account this as underwriting, but it's not clear to me that it's exactly the definition of underwriting because it's from a government entity, so it might be a slightly different category. I don't know what it would be called. But anyway, those are some things to think about.
Well, before I bring in Beth and Susan, and, you know, first of all, people don't even know the history of Pacifica. Hill was very explicit when he set up the stations. He essentially advocated doing advertising, straight up advertising, to finance the operation from the start. And then he moved to the listenership model. But underwriting, I mean, there are a lot of people who think it's a dirty word. And, you know, all of us involved with fundraising operations have gone to restaurants, gotten restaurants to give us money for free or food for free. And they have been always appreciative of the advertising that they got from it. I used to go pick up the food from different restaurants that would give us food for the marathons. And that, you know, it's just ridiculous to think that going to those kind of places is some, like, you know, capitalist impurity type of ritual you're doing. It's nuts. So, and anyway, people have to think about the question of the revenue streams coming in and this fiscal collapse that we're in. Anyway, go on, Beth.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm not sure. I mean, I guess I should offer this to Susan. I'm not sure whether it belongs in the motion or in the policy or some protocols or wherever, but we have that the motion laid out a long list of criteria. We don't accept money from tobacco and weapons manufacturers and this and that and the other. But it still leaves a lot open to interpretation and individual judgment calls. And I'm thinking specifically of having heard that Trader Joe's offered to underwrite, I think it was KPFT. If there's somebody here who knows more about it than I do, you know, please correct me if I'm off on that. But, and that was turned away because
of union issues, I guess it was. But again, without, I mean, someone just laid down the law and said, no, I shop at Trader Joe's, and I have for 30 years. I sit on the board of the local food co-op. I'm trying to get that up and running, and we will be hiring as many of the Trader Joe's workers as I can find, because they're just, I don't shop at conventional supermarkets for a reason. I don't run into other Pacifica members at Ralph's or Vons. I do run into them in Trader Joe's, both as customers and as workers. And I've been talking to the workers there. Most of them there moved to Trader Joe's after having entered the labor market through other supermarkets and having been union members, and gave that up to go work at Trader Joe's. And then they've been there, some of them, as long as I've been in the county, like more than 30 years. So I think we need a way to score business. If someone wants to give us money, I mean, one of the potentials out here are the Indian casinos. And there are some who would have a problem with the issue of vice. And I don't think it's a clear cut yes or no. I think it would depend on the circumstances and terms and conditions and whatever. I think we need a scoring system. And I don't have one in mind. So I'm guessing I'm proposing inventing a scoring system so that it doesn't come down to, you know, just any one person's personal biases who's in a position to vote things up or down. Thank you.
All right, thank you. And just before Julie, BAI was offered several hundred thousand dollars by a partner at Goldman Sachs, who had listened to the Martin Luther King programming and was moved to donate his bonus. And everybody freaked out about that. Oh my God, we're taking money from Goldman Sachs. You know, it means that Goldman Sachs is going to dictate our policy on the air. I mean, what bullshit? So, you know, anyway, that's the kind of craziness that I have to say I personally find objectionable. Go on, Julie.
The one thing I wanted to say is I want to be careful and say I thought the discussion around Trader Joe's wasn't because they did come to us, that it was just a hypothetical. That's my recollection. I could be wrong, but, you know, so I want to be really clear, you know, that I feel like somebody offered that up as an example of a problematic potential just from the standpoint that I'm sorry, but they do have union issues, right? You know, and so, you know, it's like, so would we take advertise or underwriting funds from them? You know, it's not a slam dunk yes, right? I didn't say it was a no, but it's not a slam dunk yes. And I think there was a conversation around that. I don't know that it was actually, I don't remember that the details were that it came up and that we actually turned them down because they actually came to us. I don't think we did that. I just wanted to share that. Sorry.
All right. Well, Susan probably knows what happened. Go on, Susan.
If I recall, somebody had made an approach to Trader Joe's and it was possible, though I don't know that it got very far along the line. And I brought it up as an issue and as an opportunity. I'm glad that Beth has raised it. And Alex said that it was unacceptable because of labor issues. So I just let that drop. A few things. Well, first, Beth, I'd love to, you know, I'll draft some stuff up and send it your way and love your participation, help with it. That's one thing. Second thing is, yes, we had a long list of things, including that there could not be underwriting for a specific program. We do have, in our underwriting, if somebody's entity has a kind of an interest area, music, art, food, social, whatever, that we try to load them in. I mean, it's our decision. We load those, that underwriting into the slots where it's relevant to what the underwriter cares about. So I think we've got some good things on that. Rather than having a scoring, I suggest that there be a body that where there is something, where there is some people saying, yes, this is a good idea, and other people saying, no, it's not a good idea. So Trader Joe's would be a good example, maybe Indian casinos, that there be a little investigatory working group that comes forward and makes the presentation and also includes advice from management and makes a presentation to the PNB and says, what should our policy be on this? And then to Jim, James Sagerton's issue about, you know, running afoul of other things. I think the major question is, unrelated business income as, in terms of like IRS and, you know, that sort of thing. I think we need to consult with tax attorneys about where we might run afoul of this. But frankly, we don't make enough money to make it a big issue, at least not yet. And I think this is a very important portfolio that we should be developing. I particularly love Heather's point that there are a lot of mission-related small businesses that yep. we should be out helping get the word out. And Otis, whose cat is there, has made the point that radio, part of what makes radio interesting is having a variety of things come in, not just having static radio over a long period of time. And when you bring in some things, we've got great, you know, .gov pieces that are done by the Ad Council that are fabulous, and really liven up our radio. I think we just play those for free. I don't think we're getting money from them. But at any rate, I think we can make our radio more competitive for listeners and do a better job for the community if we really fire up an underwriting program.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And there's a lot of people motivated to do that. Go on, Jim.
Yeah, it wasn't so much my issue as Susan phrased it about the underwriting. It was more to do with the reporting requirements. Apparently there are some strict reporting requirements associated with underwriting, and you have to keep very careful records, you know, have logs of when the underwriting is on. The person who was raising these issues was concerned that at Pacifica, we're not very good at that sort of thing, and we would fall afoul of the record keeping.
And the record, it's the record keeping for the contracts with the underwriters.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm not saying that should be a block, and I'm not one who feels that an entity has to be perfect before we can accept underwriting from them. We certainly have our own issues with our own employees at Pacifica. We're not perfect. We're not perfect in the way we treat each other on the boards and among the factions. So I don't think we should necessarily demand perfection from everybody else who might want to give us some underwriting, especially when you consider that we are in this financial crisis. We're really about here trying to save this network, to repair it and make it a more perfect network later on. Right now, we're just trying to keep it alive. So I'm not against underwriting for individual programs. I'm not against underwriting from imperfect entities. You know, I want to put some limits on it. I think this is a rescue program. And I believe the period for the experiment with the underwriting, I seem to recall it being a year, but I'm quite sure we're past that by now, and we should do something to you know, officially memorialize what we're doing.
Yeah, but for example, here in New York, I've offered to potentially run workshops with the staff, the producers, because there are legal issues about underwriting. And I've not seen any of that being done in the stations. People can correct me if I'm wrong, but there are whole legal issues the FCC imposes about underwriting that the producers couldn't even know what to do if they're going to go out and sell it. And so if people aren't willing to participate and learn about it, I got to say, like, what the hell's going on here? And it's not, it is a little complicated. I think it's a little complicated. Go on, Heather.
Well, a couple of things. One is that I'm wondering if we should or could develop an underwriting committee and or make this a part of a national fundraising committee altogether. I don't think we necessarily have that. I'm just bringing that up. I think we should do it.
All right. I agree. We should do that here. This should come out of the committee as a subcommittee. I would volunteer to be part of it.
Okay, great. Let's do it.
If Susan, you want to be part of that, great. You can write and argue about it. I can follow
That'd
you
be great. That'd be great. And
if you three of us work together, that's cool. All right. Now, we are...
I certainly hear that Heather has volunteered Susan.
Yeah, right. Actually, Susan's cat is nodding her head there.
I see.
Yeah, she's nodding her head. Absolutely.
Kind of personal privilege.
Go on.
I'm finding it really hard to hear and spot. I think it may be your line, Jim Singerman. It sounds, or maybe it's the other Jim, James.
It's That's all that. It's typical of New Jersey.
Are electronic sounds that makes it. So I didn't actually hear what you were saying, Jim Singerman, just now.
We were just saying, hey, let's, Heather said, let's get an underwriting committee together. I said, right on, let's do that. I volunteer to be part of it. Heather volunteered and we volunteered Susan. You're welcome.
I want to check too. With the national office, maybe John Almella. It could be that Melody Virtue has already done some work or, you know, the law firm she's associated with.
All right, let's
see if we've done some of this before.
All right, well, let me just say that we actually gathered lots of information about this that nobody's really used. That's what's so amazing about it. We actually have lots of information about this that nobody's actually taken advantage of. So, you know, I mean, that's a fact. Anyway, the last thing I was going to talk about, which obviously would take forever, and we're at time, more or less, is what to do next with the state of Pacifica, which I know would take us 3 hours to 4 hours to do. And so I would defer that to the next meeting. I should note to everybody here that we've been having, one series of WVA town hall meetings, which have increasingly focused in on practical measures that we can do with the limitations of lack of resources to try to solve the problems locally with the fiscal problem. And I know that to open this up would keep us here for two or three more hours. So, I'd rather not do that, because we'd all have a lot to say about this. But, I wanted people to know on the stream and here that, this Saturday at 1 o'clock or actually 5:30, we're going to have another town hall meeting that they can look at KPTFX. They can join us. It'd be great to have members of the Strategic Planning Committee come from different signal areas. They can sit there and rake us over the coals. And, we're going to further, I have to listen now to about 6 hours of meetings to summarize them, but there were a lot of good ideas. And the thing is to get the stuff implemented now. That's the main thing. Are there any other final comments? Donna, you've been very silent. Do you have anything else to say? You want to make the last word here, Donna? Donna, are you still there or did we put you to sleep? Okay, whatever. All right, I move to adjourn the meeting.
No, Jim, I have my hand up.
Go on, Jim.
Yeah, I just want to say very quickly, I think we did discuss a lot of the next steps here. We're talking about the underwriting. We're talking about mining our own resources, calling lapsed listeners, sending reminders to people whose renewal is due for their membership, et cetera, using our archives. We know what to do. We just have to get busy doing it.
Right.
And finally, I wanted to ask one of the writers in the chat, and I'm not going to say who, but they'll, you know, somebody said in the chat, I can say who, doesn't matter. One of the stations put together a spreadsheet, which is a format that would make it easier for the other stations to plop in their data and produce the same type of results. Was that about sharing programming? And was that, are you saying that one of the stations has done this, or one of the stations should do this and then bring it to the table when the managers and the PDs meet and they can talk about it?
So this is Julie. I put that comment in the chat. And my understanding was that, you know, it's not super difficult, but there's, you know, some post-processing that you have to do to turn, you know, the fundraising and Nielsen stuff into what Dingaman was asking for.
Right.
And that one of the stations did that. And they did it a couple weeks ago, and they were still working on it. They were trying to, like, you know, spiff the format up just a little bit, I think. But, and I'm pretty sure that Stephanie reported on this and said that they were then willing to share that as a template so that the other stations wouldn't have to, all they would really have to do is plop in their data. They wouldn't have to reinvent the wheel in terms of, you know, how do we pull all these different pieces of data together to kind of figure out, you know, what it tells us? So.
All right. I guess my skepticism, I think, Jim, you have to mute there because that's where the hum is coming from. If I recall.
I am muted.
Yeah. You know, okay. It was a net type of thing that was the result of all that. I think they were inputting the cost of premiums and all these other things. They were making calculations as to, you know, perhaps labor and all that kind of stuff, you know, whatever kind of equation they came up with. But again, I've been looking at this kind of material for quite a long time, for a couple of decades. And so I frankly have to state openly, I am completely skeptical about the fact that we do not have this information. Frankly, I could use even stronger language. I will refrain. The fact that we don't get this information, it's not to sit there and point, you know, oh my God, look at this. It's to learn from other stations. It's to learn what's working and what isn't working. And, you know, I know what's not working in New York, Susan. I'm well aware of it. I'm not going to get into a discussion about it on the air right now, but I know what's working and what isn't working. I know that the most important thing to get out of this mess, if we're going to talk strategically, is that we have to aim as a network to increase the amount of people listening to each station, I would say at least 250,000 a week as a short-term goal, because no station has that many people listening to it right now. And there are certain things we could do to inch it up like that. One thing is to have a greater cognizance of morning and afternoon drive. And I would also say something that just is amazing to me, is something we don't think about, is that we have to integrate throughout our whole 24/7 schedule appeals to people driving in cars. Because
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
This is getting into the next discussion. It's very meritorious, but can we save it for the next meeting?
Well, I'm going to use the privilege of the chair just to do my 2 minutes. Give me 2 minutes, please.
It's two.
And 2 minutes. Thank you, Susan. And the aiming to people in the cars is that we get very few people in the statistics and studies I've ever looked at who are driving in their cars listening to Pacifica. Now, I've certainly been in friends' cars that listen to Pacifica, but statistically speaking, it's insignificant compared to the general trends of how people listen to radio. Very few people, they generally listen to the stations at home. So that's, to me, the short-term goal is to really boost the cumes up, because that will increase and stabilize each station fiscally, because there will be a certain percentage of people who subscribe and build up our membership. It is no secret that our membership has declined from 2004 from 100,000 paid listeners to 30,000 right now. So there's simple measures we can take. But on that optimistic note, let me make a motion to adjourn.
I second the motion.
We're past our time. No motion is required. You can just declare us adjourned.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jim.
Thank you, Heather. Thank you. I second that. Second that motion.
Good discussion.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye.